Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hi, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by your good friends over at King's Comics in Sydney, 403 George Street. Should you ever find yourself in Sydney, you can find all the comics that we're about to talk about on this episode. And if you can't make it to Sydney, you can find them online at kingscomics.com. My name is Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
And every week we sit down in the back offices of King's Comics, or sometimes in the store, and we talk about the week that was in comic books, because we've read and we will review all of the books that came out last week. A great deal of them.
Yeah.
Because every week a whole bunch of comics come out from many different publishers, and we read as many of them as we can and then talk about them for your enjoyment.
Mm.
But, dear listener, that enjoyment is going to be slightly less so in the future. I mean, probably the same amount of enjoyment.
But just packed into a smaller amount of time.
Less regularly.
Yeah.
Because this is going to be, for the foreseen future, the last weekly episode of Serious Issues. There's been some changes in our financial parts. That mean, and yeah, you know,
my finance parts.
Finance parts, but it's beneath your left pectoral.
That's where your heart is. That's where your finance parts
that's
are.
That's where I keep my money. Yeah, yeah. Our financial situation has changed, we're now unable to kind of justify putting in the amount of time that it takes to put one of these episodes together.
It takes a lot of time, guys.
Yeah, to be as transparent as possible, it takes, I would say, like 2 full days to read and talk about and record and edit and upload and do the social media and do all that stuff related to just one episode of Serious Issues. We've loved doing the show and getting it to the point that it's at now, but it's not sustainable even with the amount of money that we were getting. So it is kind of like, oh, okay, this is the way that we need to change the show from now on. So it is going to become a monthly show.
Yep.
We are still going to have our Patreon going, which, to be fully honest with you, our post-show idea, which I thought was a brilliant idea, an extra 15 minutes of comic book reviews for our listeners every week, backfired.
No one likes it.
And we actually lost patrons instead of gaining them. But if you do love the show in its weekly format, I'm going to be adding some like ridiculous goal, like maybe 2,000 American.
Mm-hmm.
And if we hit that, we'll bring the show back weekly.
Yes. Nice. I like it.
But, you know, and that is a, there are well over 2,000 listeners each week to this podcast. If everyone shipped in a buck, then this show will continue weekly. But look, I don't expect, obviously I know that everyone's financial situations are different. And,
exactly.
And a podcast is for many people just a free, fun thing that they can listen to each week.
Absolutely.
But if you want to listen to this one each week, that's the only way it's going to happen, unfortunately. So patreon.com/serious issues podcast, I'm going to be editing that over the next week so it reflects our kind of new vision of doing less podcasts, but I think more quality based, because the pressure won't be on us to read everything, and it'll be mostly things that we already love and recommending things that maybe you haven't heard of before.
Yeah, we can go back and read some older stuff, recommend some trades and things like that that we don't usually have the time to do. And it means I don't have to read Spidey-Geddon anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, there are certain things that we read just because, you know, like we obviously
have to.
First things first means we read all the new number one stuff, and I mean, we don't have to, but whatever reason, the podcast became a thing where we just felt we should always, you know, continue reading things like Batman and events because they are the biggest thing going on in comics at the time. I think it's time to tap out.
I'm so happy. I thought you were still going to make me do it. Yes.
It just means, I don't know, I think I'm going to view comic books as a far more positive light than I have in the last year, where, and I know this sounds so privileged, and it is, but, you know, they were a burden some weekends. I was thing I wanted to do was read 50 comics.
Especially, like, I work in comics 5 days a week.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes I'm like, that's not how I want to spend my weekend. I want to sit and stare at a blank wall.
I guess we actually have two more episodes already recorded with interviews with other Australian comic book creators, mm-hmm. Which will go up next week and the week after that. And then immediately after that, we're going to be announcing the nominees for our best comics books of the year. And if you would like to be part of that conversation, then head over to facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast and you can basically nominate a few things yourself. It's going to be based on the things that we've loved the most, and then you vote off what we love.
Nice.
So not everyone's favorite thing will make the finalists, but that's how award shows work.
Exactly, guys.
Please, we'd love if you're a listener of the show, we'd love to have you you talking about the books that you've loved this year over in our Facebook group, which again is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. And again, our Patreon is patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. So Siobhan, this could well be the final ever First Things First.
Oh my goodness.
The last First Things First. Last.
I feel very emotional.
And of course, First Things First is where we review all of last week's number one issues. Most of the publishers put out a big number one last week. But I want to begin by talking about what was far and away the best...
probably the best comic of the week.
Yeah, definitely. I don't even know if it really counts as a single issue.
No, they describe it as a graphic novel on the back. And I think, like, if you're going to use that term, this is basically what that means.
But this is a slightly oversized single issue.
Yep.
Published by Image Comics. It's called The Terrible Elizabeth Dunn Against the Devils in Suits. It's been written and drawn by a Brazilian cartoonist called Arabson. It's been adapted into English by the comic book writer James Robinson, with colors by Anderson Cabral. This is an unbelievable book about a man who has made a deal with the devil 20 years prior that upon his like 18th birthday or whatever, the devil will get his son. Mm-hmm. But when the devil comes to reap his reward, he offers him his daughter, his untamable daughter instead, who is living in a boarding home, which we learn has actually been set up by her mother to go extra hard on her so she's prepared for the troubles that await her when she inevitably has to fight for her life to save herself from the devil. Kind of goes off from there. It's this incredible action romp in which she teams up with a man who has sold his soul for the guitar skills at the crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
It's actually this like incredible, beautiful,
ultra violent.
Yeah, it looks like a European comic, but it's a Brazilian comic.
It looks like it was drawn by a sort of Raphael Grandpa type, if that gives you any kind of concept of what that looks like.
It's an extremely niche description of somebody.
People know who Raphael Grandpa is.
But it's that, you know, it's that extreme attention to intricate detail
and
cartooning
texture
that we love so much, that lends itself so well to frantic, crazy action scenes, which this brilliant single issue has in spades. I don't want to talk too much about the plot, but I loved the main character of the daughter, mm-hmm. and her Weasley father. And I also loved how, demons in this book are represented by men in suits.
Yes, absolutely.
The art is phenomenal. The writing is excellent. I think James Robinson was actually a great choice for translator, given this. I got a lot of similar dialogue to what I read in like his Airboy comic for Image a few years ago from this. Mm-hmm. I just think this was like the coolest thing about this is it's this beautifully printed, great cover, oversized format issue. It's $5.99 US.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, like, later on, like, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking about a new X-Men book.
Which was retailing...
$7.99 US, which works out at, like, $15 Australian.
Yeah, but you can still get it for $9.95 at King's Comics.
And
good to you.
It's just so hard to justify people spend their money on that thing when you could get this instead.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, like, an exceptionally beautiful comic book. If you love the form of comics, you have to check this out. Some of the like visual storytelling is so clever and so clear and so concise, and it's just the detail is so gorgeous.
And this is one that you're going to want on your shelf to bring out every year and just have another reread through it. It's I think it's a instant classic in my books.
Absolutely.
So again, it's called the Terrible Elizabeth Dunn and Against the Devils in Suits, written and drawn by Arabson, out through Image Comics in partnership with IHQ Studios. When it came out in 2016, it's a debut for this cartoonist Arabson, and it was nominated for an HQ MIX award in 2017. And they're actually, Arabson and James Robinson are actually working together, with Klebs Jr. on a new miniseries published by Image Comics very soon called Os Cinco, aka The Five. So look forward to that very soon.
There's just so many amazing, Brazilian and South American cartoonists working at the moment. It's such a treat.
Definitely. This was absolutely just a treat is a great way to describe this great book.
Like if you buy no other comics this week, just go to your local comic book store and pick this up, because it's a really perfect issue. And it's, you know, standalone, it's self-contained, you don't need to read anything else. It's an incredibly satisfying read. It's a bright pink cover, it's gorgeous. I loved it.
Me too. Best thing I read this week.
Absolutely.
No competition. Bitter Root is another Image series that started this week. This is an actual single issue with a number one on it. And it was written by two of our favorites. David mm-hmm. F. Walker wrote this one with art by Sanford Green. Those two last worked together on a beloved run of from Marvel, Power Man and Iron Fist. That's right. And they're also working with Chuck Brown, who's the third creator credited to this book. It's called Bitter Root, and it actually reminded me a lot of that. What was that, Gravedigger Society?
Yeah. Because it's set in a similar era. It's all sort of 1920s Harlem flat caps.
That's right. And so we have a supernatural kind of like a cult, almost like Ghostbusters kind of unit.
They're a family, I believe.
They're a family, yep. And it's kind of like their duty to keep spirit, like spooky stuff at bay.
Yeah.
The younger...
Specifically, it looks like people who have been inhabited by demons.
That's right. So it's like a little bit Exorcist, a little bit Ghostbusters. We have the younger members of this family... basically learning the ropes, they're not as good as their predecessors. But the girl in the family, she's got chops, Siobhan.
She sure does.
But they don't want her to fight because...
she's a girl.
That's right. Meanwhile, over in Mississippi, a man is about to be hanged, a black man. I should say that all the characters thus far described are black.
Yes.
Until we meet a black man who is about to be hanged by a group of the KKK in Mississippi. Execution is interrupted by one man who possibly belongs to the family that we've met earlier in this comic.
He holding has a cool sci-fi looking gun.
Yeah, and he dispatches of the KKK members, as everyone should, very, very quickly.
So this is, again, like using sort of overarching themes of racism and intolerance to tell like a really, really sort of great sci-fi fantasy story, I suppose.
Supernatural, yeah. Supernatural. It's like, yeah, it's very larger than life in that aspect, but with a lot of realness coming from the past.
It's described. There's some really great backup material in this issue, and there's an essay from John Jennings, who is a professor of media and cultural studies at the University of California, and he describes it as ethno-gothic, which I think that's a cool way to describe it.
Sanford Green's art is a delight.
Absolutely. It's colored a bit, the colors sometimes make it a bit murky, but I suppose that kind of adds to the underworld, underground sort of theme.
Yeah, definitely.
But there are times where I was like, oh, I wish I could sort of see what was going on a bit more clearly. Because some of the monster designs are so good.
Yeah, so great. This wasn't the incredible issue that I was hoping for, but it was certainly a good start to what could become an incredible series.
Absolutely, and it's good world building for a fun series, and there's lots of fun characters who we've already sort of been introduced to.
Yeah, so it was actually like, this is a fun week of First Things First, where I was like, do I really want to read another issue of this comic? Like, you know, now that I know that the podcast isn't going to be demanding it anymore.
Yeah, you can make a real choice.
I'll definitely continue on this one. Yeah. I'll enjoy it. I like the creators a lot.
So absolutely.
doesn't get more praising than that. I will keep reading this. Over to Marvel now, and as we mentioned earlier, they've released a new Uncanny X-Men number one this week.
And guys, it's weekly.
It's a weekly X-Men book, and we have three writers, on this issue. Ed Brisson, Matthew Rosenberg, and Kelly Thompson. Who have all done little bits and pieces in the X world over the last year. Mm-hmm. And here they are writing an Uncanny X-Men issue together with Mahmoud Azra on art and Michelle Rosenberg on color. I did enjoy seeing the word Rosenberg written twice on the front cover of this issue.
Yes.
For Rochelle and Matt. You are the bigger X fan of the two of us, Siobhan.
Mm-hmm.
You liked this.
I did. I thought this was pretty enjoyable, just in the sense that there seemed like there was an actual story that was being told, like there's a genuine mystery at the heart of it, and I thought it was nicely paced. I thought it was a sort of a quick, fairly exciting read. I like the sort of X team at the center of it. I like the characters that they're using. It's all, you know, Pixie and Armor and Glob Herman, as well as the sort of older teams, and it's got Jamie Madrox at the center, and I think it's a good use of Jamie Madrox.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this.
I felt like I'd read it like 100 times before.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I really was like, oh, wow, this feels really fresh. This feels really different for the X-Men, but I fully buy that this is something that we've seen a lot. I mean, it's hard to do fresh with the X-Men.
Yeah, and it's very hard to write this many characters well when, you know, because almost every X-Men shows up at some point in this issue.
Yes, and the classic, like, the mutant cure is at the center of this, and sort of evil senators trying to make it law.
I've read that shit
cure.
So many times.
I know. Yeah. But sort of Jamie Madrox showing up en masse to try and shut things down very awkwardly, and Kitty Pryde has gone missing and no one knows where she is. I thought that was like a fairly compelling slant to it, taking a very classic X trope and making it sort of different and fresh. And then we see that the Senator and Kitty have both been kidnapped by a mysterious force, as well as Apocalypse. That's
Apocalypse
crazy.
Also been kidnapped. You hated Apocalypse a week ago.
Yeah, now I like him again. Comics. And then there was three little mini backup stories, which I also enjoyed. I really liked, I don't know who wrote the first one, about Bishop, but I liked that.
Yep.
Bishop story, that was written by Matthew Rosenberg with Mirko Kolak on art. And then we got a Jean Grey story written by Kelly Thompson with Ibrahim Robison, which I also enjoyed. And then we got an Armor and Annal story, which I also enjoyed, which had art by Mark Bagley and written by Ed Brosson. I thought this was like, I read a lot of terrible X-Men comics.
I'm not saying it was terrible. This was not, I was like finally, like after, it's been quite a long period of mostly lackluster X-Men books. I liked X-Men Red.
I find this more exciting than X-Men Red, I have to say.
I got quite used to all the depictions, especially of Laura and Jean in that, and I hated the depiction of Laura in this issue.
She's a creepy old lady. I love a creepy old lady.
That she does. I won't be continuing with this one, but
I will. I mean, it's weekly, so it's not that big of a commitment. If it's terrible in 3 weeks, I can be like, nah. but I'm going to check it out because I genuinely did enjoy that.
Sweet.
Is
it the same three of them doing every issue? Or?
I think so. It's like a bad version of 52.
Marvel also put out Infinity Warps issue number one, which was an anthology of fun, jokey, fun in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Jokey kind of...
it's how they always do the...
Marvel mashups.
Yeah.
This is like this is the comedic one-shot, which featured...
To tie in with the... main event.
The best one from this little anthology, I thought, was written by Ryan North with art by Natasha Bustos. Of course, Ryan North, the writer of Squirrel Girl, Natasha Bustos, the artist of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and they gave us Moon Squirrel and Tippy Saw, which combined Squirrel Girl and Moon Girl, which I thought was really, really fun and sweet and exactly what, you know, a short story in a book like this should be.
It was enjoyable, but I would still rather just see those two characters team up.
Definitely. I mean, it helped that it came out the same week as a Squirrel Girl issue.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a Moon Girl issue comes out this week too. So it wasn't like we're getting this thing instead of the other two things. It was a fun little addition. But I didn't really like any of the other short stories in this.
I thought for a second that it was going to be really hilariously advanced. Because the final story is about...
The Fantastic Two.
Yep. And they just made that, like, Reed and Ben, kind of. But Reed can also go invisible, and Ben also is on fire. But I thought that they were going to be, like...
lovers.
Yeah. Ah. Like Johnny and Reed.
Right, yeah,
that's
yeah.
what it was going to be.
That'd be
and
cute.
I was like, ooh. But that's not what it was. Good. Obviously, that's the fan fiction I'm writing.
So, like, I loved this. Like, so obviously, like, yeah, Reed and Sue together is Mr. Invisible. That works, sure.
Yeah.
But Johnny and Ben together is Hot Rocks. What a terrible superhero name.
That is bad.
Hey, Hot Rocks.
Should be called Flaming Boulder. That's not good.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Finally from Marvel, I know you definitely didn't read this.
100.
This is
the
prelude to Captain Marvel, the upcoming MCU movie.
When is that out?
Next year sometime, okay. March-ish maybe. And every time they put out an MCU movie, we get these weird little prelude comics, most of which are written by Will Corona Pilgrim, who actually does like a mostly good job given what little amount he has to work
yeah,
with.
Yeah, the poor guy.
Andrea DeVito did art on this one with colors by Laura Villari. And so it's a Captain Marvel prelude, which does not feature Carol, aka Captain Marvel, at any point.
Oh, good.
This is kind of letting us know what Nick Fury and Maria Hill have been doing since Age of Ultron.
Oh, what have they been up to? If you are chilling?
They've been like observing, almost being watchers. Because as you know, at the end of Infinity War, they're the last two we see turn to dust as Nick Fury sends the distress signal out to Captain Marvel via a pager.
Wait, hang on. So are they dust? Nick Fury and Maria Hill dust?
Yeah, they turn to dust at the end of... Did you watch that?
Yeah.
You don't remember them turning to dust?
I don't remember who turned into dust. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant, right? They're just going to come back. Who cares?
Yeah, I know. But like that was a fun little post-credit scene. You don't remember that? I reckon you left before it happened.
I mean, very broadly, very vaguely. Yeah, sure.
So this is basically it kind of what happens between them in between Age of Ultron and turning to dust at the end of Infinity War.
Okay, right.
And I thought it was like actually pretty fun.
Yeah, cool. Nice.
It's not necessary at all, but if you are like, you know, a completionist in terms of that universe, there are tidbits that you will find are pretty interesting in this issue.
Ooh, love a tid.
Love a bit of tid.
Love a bit of tid.
Over to DC now. Did you read Electric Warriors number one? This is written by Steve Orlando with art by Trevor Foreman,
who we
saw him doing art on the Marvel Knights issue last week, which we thought was like pretty straight for Trevor Foreman. Mm. This is him going balls to the wall,
bonkers.
Totally weird, like early 2000s CGI textures in some of the space parts. And this is why don't you tell me what this is about? Because I could not even begin to tell you.
So, unless I am totally incorrect, I believe that this is set in like in the post Commandy universe. So Commandy is the last kid on Earth, created by Jack Kirby, and he lives in a world where animals have become super intelligent.
Yep.
And now they keep humans as slaves.
That's right.
And so this appears to be set like 100 years after that, and humans have rights again. But there is still tension between the animal people and the human people. And then to avoid intergalactic war, humanity must choose a champion to go and fight in some kind of Thunderdome-esque
the Galactic thing, Games.
I think. And in this issue, we see two have been chosen. One who is a cool octopus lady from underwater who speaks in crazy colors.
Mm-hmm.
And at first we think it is a young man who is very upstanding and very... you know, sees it as his duty and is very committed until we realize that his twin brother, who is more of a rebel and hates the animals and what they did to humanity and will never forgive them, has taken his place.
Right.
I really enjoyed this. I thought this was like a fun use of that concept, doing something different with it, taking it forward. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was.
And that's also there's a crazy firestorm teaser at the end as well.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I thought this is like totally wild, like fun sci-fi DC nonsense.
Yeah.
So if that floats your boat will indeed be floated by this comic.
Absolutely. I'm trying to think of anything that it's like. Is there anything that I could compare it to?
My like Final Crisis in its own way.
Yeah. Sure.
And I was also like, yeah, it's a good little thing to read if you enjoyed that Commandy challenge that DC put out last year. That was fun. I wish they did another one of those.
I know. That was such a good idea. But I really enjoy this. I will definitely be reading more of this. I think Travel Foreman's so good, and this is such a like funny combination of styles that he's using. I thought it was clever.
From Dark Horse, I read the first issue of God of War. Which is a video. I loved the video game this year. It's probably my favorite video game of the year this year. Yeah, it's awesome.
I thought you were like a Nintendo guy, not a like big muscles bro.
You would love this. It's actually about being. It's about being a dad. It's about fatherhood.
Okay.
Chris Robertson.
It looks like it's about fighting bears.
Well, no, he's trying to tame the rage. God of War used to be a very fun slashy action game, but they reimagined it as like his big kind of like third person story based adventure game in which you travel across the realms. He's moved from like the realm of the world of Greek gods to the world of Norse mythology.
Okay.
And so you have to travel through the basically the whole thing is a quest between you and your son, who is like, you know, just a young scared boy, who you refer to as boy many times throughout the game, to travel the realms in order to scatter your mother's ashes.
Oh, okay.
Or like your partner's ashes.
Heavy.
It's a brilliant game. And I was like, what are they going to do with the comic for this one? Written by Chris Robertson, art by Tony Parker and E.M. Gist.
Tony Parker, the basketball player? That's crazy.
That's right.
I didn't know he could draw.
Instead of giving us more adventures featuring these characters, this is set as like a prelude to the game, which I'm less interested in. If you are an absolute diehard of the new kind of story of God of War, then you might get a kick out of this. It's not bad by any means, but I don't think it's necessary reading.
Yeah.
As someone that, you know, considers that game his favorite of the year, you would think I would like this more, but I don't.
Fair enough.
So that's that. Valiant this week gave us Bloodshot Rising Spirit number one, written by Lonnie Nadler. It's got a huge creative
and
team
Zach
here.
Thompson.
And Zach Thompson.
Wow. Story by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. Script by Kevin Grevu. It's like fancy gravy.
Pencils by Ken Lashley.
I like
Finishes Lashley. By Ryan Wynn, Brian Thies, and Oliver Borges.
Oh, my goodness.
Colors by Diego Rodriguez.
Wow.
That's a huge lineup of talent, and you would think that would result in a better book than this.
I didn't hate this. The art is not consistent, which I think makes sense once you see the creative.
Yeah,
team.
Totally.
And not necessarily the best that this book has ever looked, especially when the covers are so great. It annoys me. Like, I have a beautiful David Mack cover, and you have a really gorgeous, I don't know who that's by, but that's excellent.
Yeah, main cover is by Philippe Massafera.
There you go. I like that a lot.
And for me, it was just like, this comes hot on the heels of Lemire's Bloodshot run, which was really, really wonderful. And even though Bloodshot to me is not that interesting of a hero. Like, it's a guy who...
He's a big silly man.
It's a Wolverine kind of like riff, but instead of like having adamantium inserted into his skeleton, he has nanites that can, you know, he can take on damage and heal himself and be the best fighter he can be. Mm-hmm. I thought this was just like a trip back to the 90s and felt just kind of like a stock standard action book. Again, not bad, but a pale shade of what this book was. Six months ago.
I didn't hate the basic concept of like they're trying to regain control over Bloodshot. By trying to
false memories. Yeah.
Yeah, implant false memories in his head, and he keeps rejecting them. I thought that was like a fun setup. So I'll probably read issue two just because I like the character and I'm keen to see where it goes. But probably the best part of the whole book is the little preview we get of the Livewire issue one in the back.
Yeah, totally.
Which looks gorgeous.
With Roald Allen. Why not? I love Roald Allen. He's
love
good.
That man.
He's a secret fave. Sorry, very public fave.
Yeah.
Last number one. Oh, you didn't read this?
I didn't read this.
You goofed.
Was it amazing?
This was so much fun.
Oh, man, I'm so dumb.
I'm talking about through Nickelodeon and Kaboom this week, we got Rugrats Sea is for Hanukkah special number one. Now, you know, we're almost approaching the season where every single publisher puts out a Christmas special of some sorts. Very excited for the Klaus. Or Claws.
Always.
Specials that we're getting very soon. There's previews for that. And actually, it's Boom who we're putting that one out too. But after putting out like 8-ish issues of Rugrats comics this year, Kaboom give us a Hanukkah special, which I thought was really, really fun.
That's nice.
And because...
You know, once I smashed the lovely Nate's parents' window because I left the Hanukkah candle too close to the window.
Whoa.
The first time that they let me... light the candles.
And it like
first Christmas. It was good. First Hanukkah. First Christmas car.
All right, sure. And wait, so it was it like lit the window on fire or just
no,
the heat from
the heat from it cracked the window really
crazy.
Dramatically.
And
yeah.
were you like all eating dinner when it just shattered?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's good.
And they're like, she's a keeper.
Yeah.
She didn't even throw something at it. Skill. So, CS for Hanukkah special. Tommy Pickles' mum is Jewish. I can't remember what her name was, but and so it's her grandparents. Who we don't see as often as Stu Pickles' father, who is kind of like one of the main characters in Rugrats. But they all go away for the holidays together, and one of the grandparents is telling the kids terrifying Hanukkah stories about golems and which scares them to death. Angelica and her family are really into Hanukkah, not because they're Jewish, but because there's a brilliant description. Tommy's mum says, "Wait, why is Angelica getting all these Hanukkah presents? You're not Jewish." And then she says, "We're raising her as an omni-denominational global citizen." And then Stu says, "What does that mean?" And Angelica's father says, "It means there's about 4 days a year when she doesn't get presents." So Hanukkah is her favorite because she gets like
8 days of presents.
Exactly. And so it's
very overwhelming.
It's this great mix of like people actually wanting to celebrate Hanukkah for the right reasons, Angelica wanting to celebrate it for the wrong reasons, and the babies not wanting to celebrate anything at all because
they're babies and they don't care.
And all they just like they interpret everything as monsters. I learned a lot.
The art's so cute.
Yeah, so I didn't even say who it was by.
Gummy Tommy Pickles.
It's written by Daniel Kibblesmith, who has given us a lot of great humor-based comics this year, like Quantum and Woody and Deadpool and Black Panther more recently. And the other thing I really liked, isn't a lot.
Yeah.
The D-Man book, was it D-Man? Yeah. The Lockjaw book with D-Man in it, that's right. Written by Daniel Kibblesmith and Cullen Crawford with art by Kate Sharon. And this is just a really, really fun Rugrats book. I stopped reading the main series because I didn't need to read a Rugrats story every month. So a special... what's going on? A special coming out every few months is exactly how much Rugrats I need. And
nice.
Especially when they're doing Hanukkah stuff. That's fun.
Yeah, cute.
Really
I like
into
that.
It. It was a really nice, surprisingly good issue. Actually, I knew it was going to be good. Kibblesmith's always pretty quality, and the Rugrats comics have been good too. So, yeah.
So nice.
So that's it for First Things First. If you want to come and discuss all of the new series, the best place to do that is to come meet us online on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. Discuss all of the new series, all the old series, and more with 2,000 other comic book listeners just like you.
Just like you. They all have your face.
Do you have the dice or anything here?
Nah. I have it.
We could have played it one last time. Now we'll bring it back for a monthly thing.
Yeah, I'll find it.
So normally we roll a dice, or we haven't done it for weeks now, to see which publisher we talk about next. But what do you want to do now? Should we do DC? We talked about DC last week, so that's what first now. Mr. Miracle finished.
Tell me about it. I heard it was controversial, but I didn't read it. Obviously.
Written by Tom King and with art by Mitch Gerrards. I loved the first half of this series, and you tapped out like a little bit before halfway.
Like 3-4 issues.
And I was like, how could you not like this? And then as the series continued, I was like, I'm starting to get why someone wouldn't like this, especially when you're reading everything Tom King is putting out.
Yeah.
I think the second last issue of this actually won me over a little bit. Again, this is a kind of different take on a superhero story. It was kind of like the closest thing that Tom King has done since his excellent 12-issue The Vision run over at Marvel. Sadly, the only thing he did for Marvel. Or maybe happily. We'll never know. Mr. Miracle is a Jack Kirby creation, one of the New Gods, and this book is about him and Big Barda having a baby after Mr. Miracle has tried to commit suicide. He's an escape artist, and he tried to escape life. And as that was just a kind of brief mention at the start, suicide. I don't think it was too heavy-handed or like he explored the themes of suicide too much in the first half of the series. And then he really did, especially in this last issue. And I think it's a take that I've seen a lot of people rub the wrong way by. I'm in the stage now where wherever something starts to get away from me that Tom King's writing, I just kind of roll my eyes and continue trudging forward.
Yeah.
So I read a piece that someone wrote, a really great, probably my favorite comics journalist, Oliver Sava, who writes for Oliver Sara, who writes for AV Club.
Okay.
And he did a really great piece about this final issue and the kind of like the different personalities that I never realized that like the guy who played their babysitter, Funky, what's his name? Like the Funky guy.
I can't think of the name.
There's a character that becomes the babysitter for Mr. Miracle and Big Barda's kid. He's actually an analogy of Stan Lee.
Oh, okay.
Of course, we should mention R.I.P. Stan Lee.
R.I.P. Stan.
Created a few comic characters that we talk about each week. Just a few.
He's
just a couple.
Kind of big deal. I did get really sad about it.
Anyway, I have a beautiful story that I'll share after this,
oh, yes,
if
please.
You like. Oberon is drawn to look like Jack Kirby as well.
Okay, sorry, I had an involuntary eye roll.
But you've read issues featuring that, and you didn't pick up on that either.
Nah.
So yeah, it's something that I totally missed, and that his reaction to this issue made me appreciate it a lot more than I did after reading it to the end. I'm glad I finished the series. It's not something I would recommend many people. I don't really need to because it's going to be overhyped to hell when the trade comes out anyway.
The art was consistently like stunning.
Yeah, excellent Mitch Garrett's art. And he deserves all of the fame that he's going to be getting off the back of this book.
Yeah.
I would love to see Tom King do Sheriff of Babylon Volume 2.
I would love to see him. I appreciate what he's trying to do in terms of bringing mental health issues into comics, but I think he... just leave it alone for a minute, man.
Or like, don't do it in every one of your books, or do it with a bit more care.
Yeah, be a bit more sensitive with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I need a DC book to talk to me about suicide.
I'm fine
unless
with
it's
it.
A squad. So here's my cute little story.
Okay.
Not cute. It's a nice story. So I was DJing at a festival on Saturday in mm-hmm. Canberra. It was called Spilt Milk Festival, and out the back of in the artist area, they were doing like a little zine stall by a company an organization in Sydney called Studio A, who are based in Crow's Nest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they work with like around 12 different artists. Basically, they specialize in working and helping publish the works of artists with intellectual disabilities. And so they had two artists at the festival mm-hmm. who were basically like one of them, Greg, was I'll get their full names in 1 second. I'm trying to find it here. Greg Sindel was like drawing kind of like caricatures, or basically like trying to draw like superhero versions of different artists and everyone backstage and writing like little notes and stuff like that. But I noticed they also had some books. He was selling his own books. He's incredible. I'll post them in the group. Basically, like, he has a very, very unique style of art in which he uses like textures and colors them all in and textures. They look so good, so unique and awesome. And they're all like kind of like big genre books. So I asked which his favorite was. He had like five or six. There was like superhero ones and horror ones. And his favorite one is called Werewolf in Chinatown. He signed it. But he was like a bit reluctant to talk to me. And like, I know what it's like to be at a festival all day. I'd been there too. I mean, I can't imagine how much more difficult it is if, you know, part of your brain doesn't want to talk to people at all, or can't process, you know, conversations.
Find social interactions difficult.
I was like, oh, look, I'd love to buy your book. Don't worry about drawing anything. I know what it's like, blah, blah, blah. And one of the staff from Studio was like, oh, he's actually a bit sad. You have to excuse, you know, normally he's a lot friendlier. And I was like, oh, don't worry about it, blah, blah. And then I was like, oh, I actually have a comic book podcast. I'll totally, once I've read this, I'm totally going to talk about it. And the staff worker was like, oh, we hear that, Greg? He runs a comic book podcast. You should tell him why you're sad. And he told me that he was devastated because Stan Lee was his hero.
Yeah.
And he had been like embarrassed to talk to other people about Stan Lee. Because it was, you know, a cool music festival with musicians and American musicians and British musicians. And so they were the bulk of who he was talking to that day. And so we just start talking about like, you know, like really, you know, very basic. Just, you know, I like Stan Lee. I love Marvel kind of stuff like that. As he was signing, I didn't want to interrupt him as he was signing my book. And then he was like, oh, I'll draw a picture for you. Who's your favorite Marvel character? And I was like, why don't you just draw me yours? And so he drew Iron Man, and his Iron Man is so good.
Yeah, that was...
And the craziest thing about his signing is that he drew a speech bubble, and then he drew a face, and then he goes, who should I draw? So he was like already ready. And then in a perfect amount of space, he has incredible handwriting too. He wrote a quote from Iron Man saying, some heroes aren't born, they're built. And it just fit this speech bubble that he drew perfectly.
It's making me emotional.
Yeah, I know, it was great. And so as the podcast continues, I want to do like, I'd love to do an episode with you where it's us kind of like summing up the comics that we've read that month. And then like us trying to find creators or things within the comic book scene that we can talk bring awareness of. And Studio A is absolutely like...
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
This incredible organization. If you look up Studio A Sydney, the website is... I don't even know because I sent it to you. Is studioa.org.au. Go check out the art there. There's a whole bunch of art you can buy.
Amazing.
I want to do an interview with some artists from that, and also like the people behind the organization, because they do some cool shit.
Yeah,
like they're publishing like beautiful hardcover copies of Greg's comics.
That's amazing.
Yeah, really, really great. It'd be a good thing to get them stocked at King's as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super cool shit. So yeah, check it out, studioa.org.au. Greg Sindel. I'll be talking about that on a future episode once I've read the comic.
Cool.
That's my cute little story.
Yeah.
Let's talk about talking about DC books. Wonder Woman issue 58. This week has a new writer and a new artist, and of course it is G. Willow Wilson making her DC Comics debut with Carrie Nord on art, trying to find the full credits that are somewhere in this issue. We'll never find them though, because it's 100 pages long. No, it isn't. Carrie Nord on pencils, Mick Gray on inks, Romulo Fiato Jr. on colors. And
he does great colors, especially for Wonder Woman.
Definitely. This is a cool first issue.
Yeah.
Like a little bit understated, not the enormous explosion of difference that I was expecting to come from G. Willow Wilson on this.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed her take.
Definitely.
I enjoyed her using a lot of the things that had already been set up, mostly by like Greg Rucker and Nicola Scott.
Yep.
I thought that was good fun. I like the way that the voice she gives for Diana.
Yeah.
I thought this was good.
Yeah, definitely. Me too.
And the art's very different to anything we've seen in Wonder Woman recently, and I think it suits.
It reminded me most of the feeling.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Issues of Greg Rucker's Wonder Woman run that were done by our girl, who now
Bilquis Everly.
Bilquis Everly.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's closer to that.
But with less flowing hair.
That's very true. But I thought Carrie Nord was a great pick as artist on this. Basically Wonder Woman awakens to find Steve out of... Well, she gets a call from... I'm terrible.
Etta Candy.
Saying like, Steve has been kidnapped. We can't get in touch with him, but we've got it handled. Stay in your bed. Don't come cause a scene. And as if she listens.
As if, mate.
So she causes a scene, and we learn that there's a lot of different things at play here. There's a great amount of kind of like, I love all like the kind of the monsters in Themyscira.
Yeah.
The Minotaur and stuff like that. They all play a role in this. I think they set up things really well. And I'll be continuing this series for sure.
Absolutely agree.
You know what? No more Bendis Superman for Levins.
Oh, I didn't read it either.
Yeah, right. There you go.
I'll probably still read Action Comics, but
even though, like, basically, like, this is the big there was a big showdown between
Rogol Zar.
You're amazing for remembering that name.
Just I like read Supergirl.
Bunch of she's in that. Okay, right. But basically, like, yeah, the whole thing sets up a showdown. Now that the Earth has returned,
okay,
Zod has come because Zod has learnt that Rogol Zar was responsible for the death of Krypton, and even though Superman doesn't kill, Zod does. So it's going to be a big showdown between the two of them. And it looks like Superman's just going to let it happen.
Like, that's what I do.
It's fine. It's just like, I know what Bendis is doing. It's, if you are a massive Superman fan, you're probably getting a kick out of it. I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Talk about Supergirl.
So Supergirl issue 24 this week, written by Mark Andreyko, but fill-in art by Evan Doc Shaner.
The best fill-in you could get. Art.
Yeah, unbelievable. What a get. I opened it, like the cover was Doc Shaner, and I was like, ooh, that's exciting. And then I opened it expecting still Kevin Maguire, who I love. Mm. I do love Kevin Maguire, and I think he's done a really great run on this. But what a treat to get the first page not only featuring Ambush Bug, but also illustrated by Doc Shaner.
That's great.
So this is the story of Supergirl on like a revenge journey through space with Krypto the Wonder Dog to find out what really happened at Krypton. Did Rogolzar really destroy the planet? What's that all about? She has a new costume. She has a big axe. And she's like going to sort of scummy bars to try and find out what's going on. And I think this is really fun. It's really enjoyable.
We get her back.
We get her back in the classic costume fighting in an alien bar. Fighting Ambush Bug alongside Krypto. And it's just really enjoyable. It's a really great take on the character. It's really good fun. We see her team up with a Kaluan, you know, like Brainiac.
Oh, yep.
Who looks vaguely like Star-Lord. and now they're sort of traveling through space together, and we don't really understand what his motivations are. But as they get to the site of old Krypton, obviously, I don't know why Supergirl didn't think about that. It's like there's tons of Kryptonite everywhere, and she starts bleeding.
Oh, right.
And collapses. Poorly thought out, Supergirl.
But this is a cool series. I like, you know, let's just take the character to space and remove all the previous supporting cast except a dog.
Yeah, it works really, really well. It's really good fun. The story's moving along at a good pace. I find this very enjoyable. It's a good take on the character.
Awesome. So good. Final DC book for today is Catwoman, issue number 5, written by and drawn by Joelle Jones with colors by Laura Alred. Why don't you fill us in here?
So this is Catwoman. She has retreated out of Gotham to lick her wounds after being leaving Bruce at the altar. And she has been targeted by a crime/government family, who is sort of Lady Macbeth by the governor's wife, who is a sort of evil lady with big plastic surgery face.
Yep.
And she takes drugs to keep her sweet plastic surgery. Plastic surgery face. All together. And it starts off with her giving her husband an overdose of the drug, which makes him take a knife to a piece of broken glass to his own face and body, and he murders himself. Very heavy.
Cool way to go out.
But I love how Joelle Jones always uses black as blood.
Instead of red,
I think it always looks great. Really great. And we also see Catwoman fighting to save her semi-comatose sister against all these sort of evil government types. And I just love, this is the most like beautiful, stylish, fun book. It reminds me of, what's that TV show with Kevin Spacey about evil presidents? That no longer really has Kevin Spacey in it because he's not cool.
The big Netflix one. Everyone knows it but me.
Yeah, I've watched it. This is what it reminds me of. But Catwoman.
Okay, cool.
And like super drugs and more violence. And I think that's great. but this is such a great series. I'm still really enjoying it.
I'm not going to Google Kevin Spacey show.
Nah, good. It'll ruin your internet search history.
Yeah, you're right. This is one of the best looking DC books at the moment too.
And just so worth the whole Batman wedding nonsense to get this book out of it.
What if she gets married to someone else at the end of this run?
I hope so.
Just slam really Bradley back in the game.
Yeah. Great call.
Let's talk about Marvel Comics now. That's it for DC. Over to Marvel. What do we talk about first? This big Avengers book?
Sure.
So we got the 700th issue of Avengers this week, a.k.a. The Avengers, issue 10. this is written by Jason Aaron with an all-star cast of artists, including Fraser Irving, Adam Kubert, Andrea Sorrentino, David Marquez, and Ed McGuinness, plus colorists Justin Ponsor, Eric Arciniega, Matthew Wilson, and Giada Machiizio.
I love David Marquez. He's very good.
Yeah, he's a great fit for this run. It is this just big, fun, kind of
Avengers versus Namor
versus Russian superheroes.
Yeah.
That does a lot of like really fun things with Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And kind of sets up a lot of the future things that the Avengers are going to face in the upcoming issues. Normally I hate it when they do that, but this kind of was fun.
Yeah. This was enjoyable. I thought it was good.
The best scene.
Okay, so there's a big reveal at the end of like, whoa, it's this guy. Is he supposed to have been dead and I just didn't know and I just didn't care?
Phil Coulson? Yeah. Phil Coulson is alive. He died in Deadpool.
Okay.
Yep. But we knew that was going to be.
Yeah. That's why Deadpool was sad.
That's right. Deadpool killed Phil Coulson because evil Steve Rogers told him to.
Remember that time?
Yeah.
Remember that? Seems like it was an age ago.
I thought this was a nice like kind of return to what Jason Aaron was doing this time last year in his, what was that big Marvel one-shot?
Yep.
Marvel Legacy one-shot, yep. Which kind of like amounted to nothing until recently.
Yeah.
So we'll probably see all the things that introduced in this issue. Like that was a year ago and we still don't really have Wolverine back properly.
I know.
He just kind of shows up every now and then.
Very annoying to me. But I really enjoyed the backup story. I'm not 100% sure who wrote it, but illustrated by Fraser Irving.
It's all by Jason Aaron.
Cool. Yeah. That's the current Ghost Rider hanging out with Odin.
Yes.
Cool.
But also past Odin. So like Odin from a million years ago.
Odin. Old man Odin. Isn't that the same Odin?
Yeah, but as in he's not the Odin of the present.
Either way.
Is he already right. From the past?
I thought it was just him holding on to grudges millions of years later.
I loved this. This was great. There is a lot of dumb things in it, like Wolverine. And actually, I like that too. Whatever, I don't care. I liked all of this. This was fun. This is what I expected from Jason Aaron's Avengers run. And it's great. You know, it's taken him a few issues to get here.
This is definitely the most enjoyable thing, and it's all tying into the Marvel Legends-y stuff. Oh yeah, that was great.
Every one of these little backups. Fuck, I didn't talk about the best thing. Every one of these little backups has a moment, like you know, kind of like fun, kind of final pages. And so the one that Andrea Sorrentino draws has a wasp infiltrating a castle in Transylvania, in Romania, the region once known as Transylvania. So to rescue Blade, and to ask him to be on the Avengers.
Great. So I love good. It.
So
bring
great.
Back Blade. More yeah. Blade, please.
Blade rules. So that was. This is a really, really fun. And I didn't even realize it was coming, too.
Yeah. Me neither.
While also, it was cheaper than the X-Men issue, and it felt way longer and way more... with way more stuff in it.
Yeah, but this is a 700th issue.
So why wasn't it $700?
It's a good point. You should get on the phone to the Marvel marketing team.
Hey, Marvel? Yes, Levin's here. Yep, me again. Yeah, I gotta have to tell you. You should have made... that issue that was $700. Makes sense to me. Makes sense to you. The buyers will love it. And
comic book stores will love it.
Put 700 blades in it too.
Yes.
Actual blades. So actual every blades. Page you cut yourself on.
Yes. Comics aren't for kids anymore,
I
guys.
I saved Marvel again, everybody. What do you want to talk about next? Speaking of Marvel. How about the final issue of Cosmic Ghost Rider?
Oh, I didn't read it.
Damn. Written by Donny Cates with art by Dylan Burnett. And Antonio Fabella on colors. This is one of those ones where when it ends, I was like, oh shit, this is the end. Siobhan just got sent 50 double passes to Robin Hood.
Jamie Foxx is in it. Actually, Ben Mendelsohn is in it.
Mendelsohn
I fucking
is
love
in
Ben
it?
Mendelsohn.
Is he the sheriff of Nottingham?
Yes, please.
Of course he is.
He's the best bad guy of them all. But a nice guy in real life.
Yeah.
I have a good Ben Mendelsohn story.
Oh, really?
Incredibly nice and supportive to charities that support people with intellectual disabilities.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
Go Mendo.
Good guy.
Good end of Cosmic Ghost Rider.
What was the end?
The end was him just kind of like leaving Thanos in the timeline and hoping for the best.
I like that ending.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh shit, it's over. But then he's going to return in Donny Cates' Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Look. Marvel fucking love these characters. They are not letting go of them for a very long time. Prepare to see a lot of cosmic blah, blah, blah for the rest of time.
Cosmic blah, blah, blah. Great. My favorite. Speaking of cosmic blah, 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 this is the last issue of Fantastic Four I'm going to read.
Nice. Tell me why.
Dan Slott.
Considering you told me I should start reading it again last issue.
Yeah. this is issue number 3, written by Dan Slott, with art by Sarah Pacelli, Nico Leon, and Marte Gracia. Great art throughout it, but As you can see on the cover, it's not just the Fantastic Four. It's like all the Avengers and a whole bunch of Marvel characters. And I was like, why is this? Just feels like a Marvel event
as opposed
to like a Fantastic Four comic. And maybe a few issues from now, it'll get have that kind of nice closeness. There's a few moments of kind of cool family stuff, but it isn't written as cool as Hickman did it, and it isn't written as sweetly as Mark Waid did it. And I'd rather just reread those runs, which I plan to do at some point in my life.
Yeah,
so why aren't I doing that instead of reading these new ones that I don't like as much? Again, it's not bad. It's just not the kind of Fantastic Four book I want to read.
Yeah, fair enough.
Should
we talk about Captain America?
Yeah. So I didn't read issue number 4, but I was like, fuck it, I'll just pick up number 5. And I was fine. I wasn't lost at any point.
No, this is so enjoyable.
You read issue 4. I recorded you talking about it and released it to the world. This is written by Ta-Nehisi Coates with art by Leon Francis Yu, Jerry Alanguilan, and Sonny Go on art. Captain America saves his gal, Sharon, from being tortured by these two new weird villains that we learn are working for Red Skull. But before he does that, though, he has to fight Taskmaster in a very, very well-written and put-together action montage.
Yep.
So, look, Ta-Nehisi Coates, you've proved it to us many times in the last few months. You can do a good action scene. That was the one thing I doubted you could do when you started Black Panther, and now you've proved it. So, good on you. Have another cake.
You're killing another cake.
Another cake.
After that other cake we sent you. so enjoyable. God, yeah. I love that he's writing comics, and I love what he's done for the Marvel Universe.
Which is solid. It's just really, really
solid.
It's good. It's good shit.
Absolutely.
Thor this week was another fun surprise, written by Jason Aaron.
This is really enjoyable.
We got the return of Tony Moore to interiors, which I've not seen on a book in a long time.
Yes. It's so gorgeously coloured.
Yeah, colours by...
John Rauch.
And this was a fun one-shot. This was the sweetest fridging story I've ever read, Siobhan.
Yeah, this was really lovely. She wasn't really fridged.
I'm joking, she wasn't fridged. But it's like the best dead lover.
Yeah, that I've read in a long time.
So basically, in short, this is a tale of young Thor from the past, in which Odin can't understand why his boy loves Midgard so much and refuses to, to
attend to his duties on... Exactly. Asgard.
Yeah. And so he makes a deal with Loki, and Loki works out that he can make Thor hate Midgard by having him fall in love and lose the love of his life. So he falls in love with a warrior, when he is called to fight somewhere in the realms, he tells her he'll be back soon. Mm-hmm. And then when he returns from the war, she's dead.
Obviously, because 40 years have passed.
Yes, that's right. But she's lived a long life. He kind of learns what it is to love a mortal. And basically, his love of Midgard strengthens through him honoring her.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was brilliant. It's totally not a fringing story. It was a fun joke to make.
That was a good joke. Super enjoyable. You know what's the only thing that I just always find slightly difficult with Thor stories? It's just the combo of, like... ye old and contemporary slang.
Right.
I just always find it weirdly jarring. Just commit either way.
No, you know what I mean? Fine. Give me a mashup.
Doesn't have to be like, have at thee, pretty boy. I'm gonna kick your ass.
Yeah, give me have at thee, fuck boy. And then he dabs.
Dabs right out of there. I enjoyed this.
Fortnite.
Good. Good. Get Marvel on the phone.
Yeah, get him again. Hey, Marvel.
It's me again.
One and a half words. Thought night.
Done. Also, what a cool design for Loki.
Yeah, definitely. Really fun. I think it definitely harkens back to how he used to be drawn in certain eras of Thor. Yeah. Very
it's more
cool
of a,
shit.
More of a full mask.
I read a lot of Marvel books this week.
Yeah.
Donnie Cates gave another great issue of Venom this week with art by Ivan Coelho and Andre Mosser. He's being held hostage by the Maker.
Which one's the Maker?
Which is the Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe.
Nice.
Basically, he...
Oh, the lowercase guy.
Yeah, that's right. The Maker plans to weaponize Venom. He also has when a symbiote connects with a person, the DNA from that person is embedded within the symbiote. So he has a sample of the now dead Flash Thompson.
Oh.
And so at one point, what's his name? Who was the regular? Eddie Brock, like, kind of gives in to this new symbiote and becomes, like, for, like, you know, one battle, he becomes Flash Thompson, so, like, Agent Venom. And it's really sweet and cool, and we might not ever see that again, but I thought it was really, really nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is funny, like, you know, in Spider-Man, which I'll talk about in a second, you know, Flash Thompson has died. He died in the last issue of Dan Slott's Spider-Man run, and it hasn't really been addressed in Expenses run yet, but they've done a really, really nice little tribute in Venom. It was a good issue. I've really, really liked Donny Cates. He's just...
Yeah, he's so clever.
He just writes the fun kind of superhero comics that I need.
He just loves
them.
When
I don't want to read anything else.
Like, that's what comes across in everything he writes. He is just having a good fucking time, and he loves superhero comics, and it's a joy to read.
Yeah, definitely. So Spider-Man this week, written by Nick Spencer with art by Humberto Ramos.
I didn't read it.
Well, I totally think that's a good plan, because in this one, MJ is sent to a therapy session. Which is, like, after reading, what's the Heroes in Crisis or whatever that was the Tom King one?
Yeah.
It's too similar to that, but right, okay. a bit more thought out, but, like, you disguise your identity and,
okay.
Yeah. I'm just like, I don't give a fuck about superhero related therapy classes.
I think it could be done. I just don't think anyone's doing a good job of it.
Yeah.
I just don't know if Nick Spencer and Tom King are the sensitive souls that we need to be
talking
about.
We kind of got
stories.
It in, like, Mariko Tamaki's She-Hulk run, which is about her seeing therapy, about the monster within her.
Sure, I'm trying to think of... I think there must be examples of superheroes having seen therapists.
Yeah, I think that's how you do it. You have them see a therapist.
Yeah.
As opposed to there being a superhero-specific therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, whatever. That immediately goes awry and leads to the deaths of heaps of superheroes. Don't do that.
Lame.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl this week.
I thought I'd read this, and then
Well, you didn't read 37, so I don't understand why you would, like...
Oh, God, I hate myself.
this is written by Ryan North with art by Derek Charm, colors by Rico Renzi.
I read the first two pages and then fell asleep, I think. Not because of the comic, because I'm tired.
A possibly Skrull version of Squirrel Girl has died, and everyone thinks Squirrel Girl is dead. And Squirrel Girl and her friends have worked out that there's a Skrull invasion, and they're the only ones that they can trust. And so they try to team up with Tony Stark, and it's just a brilliant mess of Skrull paranoia written in the most fantastically Ryan North way ever. And it's so fun and it's so silly because, you know, Skrull issues of Marvel Comics are so dumb. Well, what if they're a Skrull? Who can we trust? Blah, blah, blah. And this is just... we haven't seen, like, a Squirrel Girl deal with paranoia through, like they basically use computer science to work out how to work out people aren't Skrulls.
So fun.
It's brilliant. It's so clever. Good. I love this book. It's so good. And I'm fully used to the Derek Charm redesigns of all the characters.
Absolutely.
Now. It's great shit. The first trade of the Derek Charm Squirrel Girl is out now.
Worth picking up, guys.
Just quickly, Charles Soule this week wrote 611 of Daredevil, part three of his The Death of Daredevil storyline, in which Daredevil goes through a gauntlet of all of his major bad guys, and then just when he thinks he's at the end of it, who should show up but Bullseye, his greatest enemy of all.
Oh, no.
Except for Kingpin. But, yeah, it was really, really enjoyable. Great issue. I was like, oh, maybe I don't need to read this anymore. That was a killer issue.
Nice.
And finally, Charles Soule wrote issue 23 of Darth Vader. Both of these series are ending very soon with great art by Giuseppe Camuncoli, Danielle Olandini, David Curiel, and Dono Sanchez-Almara. This is very silly for Star Wars, which is a very silly thing. Yeah. So it's like basically how Darth Vader works with this creepy supernatural being to create his castle on the lava planet. And it definitely hits the line of this isn't Star Wars, but I don't care. I like it. And it was really enjoyable.
Cool.
It's almost I've got two issues left of this run, and I've enjoyed it more than Kieran Gillen's run, I think. So there you go.
Back out of my family. How Darth Vader works with this arm for the supernatural beings to create his castle.
Wow. And Siri really listened to a lot of what I just said. Anyway, thanks, Siri. I love
What a useful feature.
Yeah, totally. Just interrupt on a podcast and repeat everything I just said. That's why I got it, to be honest. Let's talk about some image books now, Siobhan.
Yes, please.
We've got a bunch of these too. How do you want to start?
Look, I only read two, so you should...
Gideon Falls.
Yes, please.
Jeff Lemire, Andreas Sorrentino, and Dave Stewart. I forgot he was a colorist on this.
He does colors. Oh, I'm so used to seeing him do colors on Dark Horse books.
Yeah, he does a few image ones as well, but this was fucking great.
Yeah, man, what a great... Like, this was probably the least spooky.
Yes.
Of the spooky, very spooky series, but very dark and lots of bad things happen. Oh, there is some pretty horrible, spooky look back at Norton's childhood.
Yeah, so the bulk of this series is about a priest coming to a small town to start working at the church. And then meanwhile, we have a completely unrelated in a different city, different part of America, a mental patient who... Sorry, what's it?
I don't know, a young man in a institution.
Mine had less syllables, but you're right. That's the way I say it. A man in a mental institution who is confiding in his doctor after he sees a black barn. And these two figures have not met yet, but each issue
we get
a little bit closer to them meeting. And it's really, really great at seeding something in one of the plots, and then you see the kind of... a reference to it in the other,
yeah,
in the other storyline. It's great.
And even though, like, you sort of can start to see where things are, like how they're going to interact, how they're going to come together, I was still surprised by that end reveal.
Yes.
Very, very enjoyable. Yeah. So enjoyable. Andrea Sorrentini is doing such great things in terms of panel layouts that just gives everything this really uneasy vibe the
Definitely.
Whole way through.
So good. They're a great team, Lemire and Sorrentino.
Yeah, they really are. I love this book.
What else have we got? So you read Sleepless. We'll talk about that at the end. I'll quickly burn through these other ones. Murder Falcon this week, written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson, with the colors by Mike Spicer, which is about a man dealing with his depression, but also he has to play metal guitar. And then when he plays, he powers like a murder falcon who helps defeat monsters.
Great.
This is about the murder falcon and the man assembling a band, basically. And he goes to find a bassist that he has a history with, of performing in bands with. And it's like one part, like, ridiculous fantasy monster adventure romp. Mm-hmm. And then another part, it's about depression and realizing that, you know, by like escaping into yourself and cutting off your friends, you're also cutting off your friend. You're also hurting your friends, mm-hmm, as well as yourself. It's sweet. This issue was not as much. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first issue, but I don't think you're meant to enjoy it as much as the first issue. But it's a good series. I like it.
Yeah, cool.
Cemetery Beach by Warren Ellis, with art by Jason Howard. This is the book about like 100 years ago or whatever. A group of people leave Earth and then go start a new colony in space, on the moon, maybe. I can't remember. Somewhere. But now someone from Earth has infiltrated this new colony and is now trying to escape it and take a prisoner from this new place back to his old home of Earth. And it's fun. It's interesting. I don't think of all of his collaborators, I don't like Jason Howard doing an action Warren Ellis book. It's good, but it isn't the same. It's messy in a way that, like, after getting what's his name on Wildstorm, which is so meticulous and like just like well
detailed,
well panned, like, yeah, exactly, like well directed action almost in a book. This feels like a step back, but it's solid. It's still fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun book. Skyward this week, issue number 8. Written by Joe Henderson with Lee Garbett on art and Antonio Fabella on colors. This is the book that started out with a simple concept: what if gravity was turned off? And then suddenly introduced like giant bugs and secret societies and betrayal, and it's just gotten a bit messy from that really, really simple start.
I sort of found it interesting the variety of ways that he managed to take that basic concept and the sort of impact that something that we sort of... what effect that would have on the world.
Yeah, I don't know. The giant bugs is it, like the last issue I didn't read until this morning. It's entirely like just big battles versus like of like giant dragonflies and men riding butterflies. I don't know if I want that from this book. But
it's what you're getting.
There's a really great cliffhanger in this issue, which might mean I might have to keep reading it. So that Skyward this week. Last issue of an Image series we're going to talk about is Sleepless.
Yes, please.
Issue number 9. I think it was recently revealed this is only going to be a 13-issue series.
Some bullshit.
It's written by Sarah Vaughan with art by Leila Del Duca and colors by Alyssa Sala. This basically, I think last time I reviewed an issue of this, issue number 8, I was like, yeah, the guy she's married, he's not a bad guy at all.
He's a bad guy.
He's the worst guy.
He admits in this issue that he tried to kill her, and he was like, yes, fine, I admit it, but let's move on, now we're married.
And then he tries to kill her again.
Yeah.
So definitely not a good guy, but a whole bunch of fucked up shit happens in this issue. And
this is an action-packed issue.
My God. This is one of the best series of the year, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The colors are so gorgeous. Everything about this series is so beautiful. The detail and the thought that's gone into the sort of historical accuracy
yep.
is so wonderful.
And it ends on one of my favorite comic book cliffhangers, which is two characters holding hands and jumping into a pit of nothingness.
Yes, please.
excellent issue of this book.
Excellent issue. Excellent issue. If you like fantasy, if you like romance, if you like Game of Thrones,
if you don't like sleeping.
If you hate sleep, that's not me. This is just, you've got to read it, guys.
Great issue. Very, very good.
Very, very good.
So now that we've talked about Marvel, Image, DC, we can talk about the other publishers, starting with Dark Horse. Another Lemire book is The Quantum Age, which is from the world of Black Hammer.
Which we're now going to get movies and TV shows?
Yeah, announced that he's sold Black Hammer for a TV and movie deal.
I'm like, whenever that happens, I'm always like, I'm very happy for Jeff Lemire that he is getting a big paycheck. But at the same time, something that's so referential to superhero comics specifically, beyond like the superhero genre, which now means something else. I just don't know how well it'll translate.
I just wish they would make animation.
Yeah, I don't even want animation of this. I want it in comics that I can read silently by myself.
We'll always get the comics, but I want Lemire to make as much money as possible.
Yeah, true.
I think, this is actually a superhero universe, which is like it's surprising that it's taken this long for someone to realize that and give him the big bucks for it.
I know.
But I like the idea of having like a Black Hammer movie and then spin off of TV shows.
Yeah. That's clever.
Yeah, but animate them. Make them all animated. And use the designs of Dean Ormston and Wilfredo Torres, who does the art on this one, with Dave Stewart on colors. This is the, what's the DC League of Superheroes?
Legion of Superheroes.
Legion of Superheroes kind of analogy, featuring future versions of the Black Hammer cast. This actually ties so much into the main series in a way that none of these side series have before. So this has now become essential reading if you are a fan of Black Hammer.
I think all of the Black Hammer series are essential reading, but yes, I agree.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Dr. Star at this point hasn't really tied into the main series at all.
No.
Beyond him just being a character.
Yes.
But this almost is like a sequel to the current issues of Black Hammer.
Yeah, and it gives you some sweet little insights into what's going on.
Yeah, excellent issue.
Excellent issue.
Wilfredo Torres is a brilliant artist, and I love Dave Stewart's colors on Wilfredo's art particularly.
And I love just like, this is a very sort of, this is such a cool team. Like, we have a young woman who is in a sort of flying wheelchair because her legs got blown off. Great representation.
Yep.
I love the flying armadillo guy. Mm-hmm. Also great representation for flying armadillo guys.
Finally.
Finally.
Giving
I just
them the voice
it.
That they deserve.
I just love it.
Yeah. So I also read Friendo, issue number 2.
I didn't because I couldn't remember what happened in issue 1.
Oh, you love this one.
Yeah, I'm sure I did.
Vault published this one. It's written by Pak Nedel. Wait, hold on. That's not his full name. I was going to read all their last names out as one long name. Alex Pak Nedel with illustrations by Martin Simmons and colors by D. Kniff. Friendo is about... Basically, Friendo is like a Siri that lives in your head that you put glasses on and you see a friend. And basically, Friendo exists to sell you products but also be your friend. And our main character, he hits rock bottom and he believes that Friendo saves his life. And so this is him hitting further rock bottoms, but with Friendo by his side until he can't afford to pay for Friendo anymore. And then he commits armed robbery. This is a fun, messy book. I'm really
That's cool.
into it. It's really great. It looks great. I love the covers. It's fun and different and cool and indicative of the kind of quality books that Vault are putting out at the moment.
Yeah, nice.
Big fan. Mm. You got some self-published shit over here.
Yes. Well, I have a couple of books that my darling mother picked up for me when she was on holidays in London, and she went to Gosh Comics, which is my favorite comic book store in London. And this is just a couple of the ones that she got me. She got me a couple more, which I'll talk about later. The first one is Afterwards by Gareth Brooks. And I didn't realize at the time, but it's actually a sequel to his books, The Black Project and A Thousand Colored Castles. And I managed to read this and absolutely really enjoy it without having Great. Read that. So it's not something that I think you like is essential.
Oh, that's awesome.
The first story. Printed. Yeah. Really cool printing, really interesting, cool, different panel layouts. And it's all to do with like future tech and evil future tech, right, and stuff sick. Like that. So the first story is about a guy who works in an office and he has a crush on the woman that he works with. Everyone thinks he's a bit of a weird loser because he likes real women instead of what they call... What do they call them? My Secret Girl. So everyone has a My Secret Girl, which is like an ultra advanced sex doll that they use instead of having sex with a human, because that's obviously disgusting and wrong. And so he goes out for drinks with these guys that he works with who are sort of the lads from work that he doesn't really like. And then they get him a My Secret Girl and he's really horrified and embarrassed and runs. And then he finally makes a date with the woman that he has such a big crush on from work. And the date goes really well. And she's like, do you want to come back to my house and we'll have some coffee? And he's like, yeah, this is finally happening. And he walks in and there's four buff My Secret men in her house. And then he's like, oh... But I thought, she's like, oh, you didn't think, but that's disgusting. And then laughs at him. And that's where the issue ends.
Oh my God.
It's so good.
That's cool. Who's it by again?
This guy, his name is Gareth Brooks. And then the second issue is about a husband and wife who are living in the middle of a war zone. But because the husband insists on wearing his sort of happy news goggles, he's like, everything's fine. It's going really well. Everyone's celebrating the Queen's millionth jubilee outside. It's a lovely day. And the wife sort of has to force him out of the house through the sort of war-torn England. Very enjoyable, even without having read his books. And I really want to check out the rest of it. That was really fun.
That's cool.
And then the second one I read, which I really, really loved, is called Wash Day. And it's by Jamila Rouser and Robin Smith. Script edits by J.A. Michelin, and it is an incredibly beautiful black and white comic that is just a very sort of quiet, personal, intimate look at a girl, a young black woman doing wash day. So like spending the whole day sort of getting her hair together, which my friends tell me is a long task. And it was just really sweet. It was just really nice. Just you see her go out to get a sandwich and then come home and she smokes a joint with her friend. And it's just like a really lovely, intimate,
slice
personal
of life.
Little story.
Oh, it actually says slice of life on the back.
Yeah, yeah. Gorgeous. Like really, really enjoyable. Very, very satisfying and very like personal, intimate feeling. You know,
yeah,
you
great.
Really feel like you've been brought in and embraced into something. And I really loved it.
So good. So it's Wash Day by Jamila Rouser and Robin Smith. And Afterwards by Gareth Brooks. Cool shit. Thank
yeah.
And make sure you go visit Gosh Comics.
If you're in London. Goodness gracious. Go there.
Yeah. So that is it for this episode of Serious Issues. And it could well be the last issue in this format that mm-hmm. you'll ever hear. I just want to say to everyone that listens to us and
yeah,
is part of our
gracious,
part of our Facebook group and our community, we really, really appreciate you know, the fact that we've been able to do this for as long as we have in the way that we have. And we wouldn't have been able to do it without your support. It means a lot to have this cool community of people that just love comics and
absolutely
and want comics to be for everyone, which is something that's very important to us too.
Yeah.
Look, even though this is going to be, you know, we're going to be putting out less episodes, like unless something crazy, unless we get there's a Patreon miracle. But you know, we still like this isn't because like you know yeah like mommy and daddy still love you.
Except for you. You know what you did.
The same amount of love and care is going to go into the podcast now. It'll just be a little less frequent. We hope that you'll stick around and wait for the new episodes. I know that I started this podcast with Siobhan because I wanted a weekly podcast that talked about as many comics as I read.
Yeah.
And now that I know how much work needs to go into doing that, I'm like, oh, now I know there aren't that many ones that I like listening to.
Yeah.
Power to everyone that is able to do it for longer than we have done.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we continue to give you comic podcasts in a slightly different way for many years to come.
Yeah. And thanks for listening, guys.
Yes, definitely thanks. And thanks, of course, to King's Comics for having mm-hmm. us every week. and for all their support in the podcast's life so far. And we look forward to the next couple issues. Episodes. We've got a interview with
Matt Groom,
who has a new book coming out through Image Comics in
called Self-Made.
Self-Made in early November, and we also have
December.
You're right. Sorry. We also have an interview with Chris Neal, who is actually a member of the Serious Issues Facebook group, and he is an editor. He's a comic book journalist and also an editor of his own anthology series, Meet Me in the Pit, which we reviewed last week.
Which is now available at kingscomics.com for all those who are asking.
And you can they'll be coming up in the feed next week and the week after. And then, yeah, of course, we are going to be doing our kind of awards for the best comics of the year. I would love for everyone that listens to be a part of that. So make sure you head over to facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast. I'll put something on the Patreon too. You can basically nominate. We're going to have different categories. There'll be best writer, artist, colorist, best overall series, Marvel series, DC series, Image series, other publisher series, best first issue, and best graphic novel. I think those are going to be the categories.
Cool.
So if you have something that you've loved this year, make sure you go head over to our Facebook group and recommend it to us so we can remember it. Maybe we read a lot of books. We may forget things.
Guys.
So we need your help remembering. Siobhan, I actually was like, hell yeah, now I get to read less books. But just so you know,
what that still looks like.
Exactly. So I sent off my my order for this week. Where did I send it from?
Is it a big week?
Well, I managed to get it to, here it is. It's 20-ish comics as opposed to 30-ish or 40-ish or 50-ish.
That's still a lot of comics. We live in a golden age of comics, guys.
I know, because they're so good at the moment. Yeah. So we have Brian Hill's new series coming out this week.
Great.
Through Vertigo, American Carnage. We have the 700th issue after we got Avengers 700, we get Archie 700 this week as well. So I'm going to check that out. We have a new Tom Scioli book. Scioli? How do you say his name?
Don't know who that is.
Yes, you do.
Do I?
He is the guy that draws classic Transformers looking comics. You read one of his books recently. Anyway, whatever. GoBots is the name of his series starting this week.
Oh, based on GoBots?
I guess so, maybe. I don't know.
Is GoBots the thing that you're always telling me about, Jim?
Okay.
Yeah. Pretend Transformers.
Pretend Transformers. Okay, there you go. Cool. We have a new issue of Love and Rockets.
Great.
We have the final issue of Injustice 2, which I know has been out digitally, but this is it coming out now. We have a new trade, because it's moved to trade now, of Underwinter.
Oh, awesome.
Written and drawn by that guy who is...
Ray Fawkes.
So the next chapter of that is going to be in trade format. Then lots of issues of our favorite series like Black Hammer. Dick Tracy, the Rich Tommaso Dick, and Mike Allred, Dick Tracy. We got some Exorcist is returning, Immortal Hulk, and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Shuri is all kind of the new world. It's a great week next week.
Great week.
So even though we won't talk about it immediately, at the end of the month, we'll do a kind of wrap up of everything we've read this month. So we'll probably do another one at the end of November. That's going to be what we've read since this episode, and also
I'm gonna have to take notes.
Yeah, exactly right. Just take photos of the comics you enjoyed. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode and every episode of Serious Issues you listened to so far. I hope you listen to many more in the future.
Thanks, guys.
And again, if you want to support the show, patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.